Welcome to Geeks On, a show created by geeks for geeks, covering topics that geeks like to talk about. This week, it's Geeks On Oblivion. For more information and news we talk about in the show, go to our website at www.geekson.com. Hey, everybody.
Hello.
Welcome to another episode of Geeks On. It's going to sound a little bit different this week because we have a whole new cast, mainly because it was hard to find people who've seen this movie in order to talk about it. And it's been like, what, 2 months?
I think so.
Which I don't know. I just saw it today.
Yeah, we had a hard time finding people who saw this science fiction at the beginning of the summer, so which kind of bums me out a little bit.
Yes.
But anyway, my name is Aaron Hendricks, and I'm a graphic designer here in Los Angeles, and I'm a geek.
And my name is Clint Keepin. I'm an actor and writer here in Los Angeles, California, and I, too, am a geek.
My name is Shannon Bennett, and I'm a stereoscopic 3D consultant and post-production supervisor, which totally qualifies me as like an uber geek.
My name is Jesse Borkowski, and I'm a filmmaker and digital strategy consultant in North Carolina.
Nice. Welcome, everybody. Clint, we have had you on the show before, and you edit our show all the time.
Yes. For the reason.
And Shannon was here for the 3D stereoscopic episode.
Yay.
And is back. And Jesse, you are a first-timer.
That's correct.
So welcome, welcome.
Thank you.
So has anybody done anything geeky this week that would be interesting to talk about? I have one thing. Well, I have a couple things.
But I do as well.
I have not been able to play much of this video game, but I did buy The Last of Us for the PlayStation 3. And you mean, go see the reviews. Everybody's been reviewing it and saying it's amazing. And quite frankly, the beginning of this video game, as much as I've played, is pretty damn good. It's Naughty Dog again, the guys who've been doing the Uncharted series.
And that's the post-apocalyptic.
This is the post-apocalyptic kind of zombie outbreak game.
And you team up with a young girl? Is that this one?
Yeah, I don't really want to spoil the beginning, but yes, it's you and this girl are essentially traveling across the United States. And in this kind of, it's kind of an homage to books like The Road or books and movies like Children of Men, that type of thing. And it just seems like a very sophisticated approach to a video game. You know, you're like you play a guy who's like, you know, 45 to 50 years old. He's not a barbarian with double blades and all that crap. And so you can kind of instantly identify with stuff. I mean, you just instantly can make connections with some of the things that he does because he's kind of doing the shit you would do, which is like kind of stay out of trouble.
So it is like The Road a little bit.
It is. Like, he's like, listen, not my problem. Like, he'd rather just get, you know, stay out of trouble and just live the rest of his life, you know, just not causing problems. And I don't know. There's just the approach to the whole thing is very nuanced and just, I say sophisticated. It just feels like an adult video game.
I'm assuming he doesn't succeed in staying off the radar, all this other stuff going on.
Well, you know, it wouldn't be much of a game if you were just sitting in your apartment listening to all the stuff going on. But the other thing about the game is that it's very oppressive, even in the video, in the style of the game. I'm going to regret saying this. It's not fun like you're having a blast, you know, running around shooting things a la Halo or whatever. It's amazing to play because you feel just awful that these things are happening.
I've read that even the shooting mechanics are difficult, right? It's not easy. It's not like an action.
No, actually, I actually switched the game to easy because there is, I mean, it's not a perfect game, and there is a lot of sneaking elements to the game. And unfortunately, it has the kind of Sam Fisher, the beginning years of Sam Fisher, where if you made one mistake, you're pretty much assed out. Mm-hmm. It does have that quality to it, and that's a little frustrating. So I just flipped it to easy because I felt like it was serving the story better that I didn't start over and over and over again.
And Sam Fisher being the Splinter Cell reference? Is
that Splinter Cell, which, you know, in the beginning of that series, it was, you know, stealth game.
Right.
But if you got seen at all, the game would start over.
Right.
And they've loosened that up so that if you got seen, then you needed to deal with it, and it gave you a chance to deal with it. And this is a little hard to deal with it because you're not going to take on five guys. Like, three guys are going to beat the crap out of you.
Okay.
So if there's three guys in the room, you're screwed. So anyway, it's an amazing game. I can't wait to keep playing, and I hope it kind of stays at the pace it is. Naughty Dog has really knocked it out of the park again. It's pretty spectacular.
Cool.
So that's what I've started.
Nice. I'm still trying to beat BioShock 2, so.
You haven't been playing that for 2 years, have you?
No. Nope. But I don't play as much as I'd like, so that's what I mean. I just don't get around to it as often. But I did go to E3, though. That would be my geek. And I assume, did you make it as well?
I did. I made it as well, yes.
Okay. And Shannon, how about yourself? Did you?
I didn't get to go. No, okay. It was kind of, I know a lot of people who went, but no.
Yeah, that's usually how it is for me, but this year I got in, and I finally got to see what it was all about. But, of course, not being really in the industry, I don't get to see all of the stuff, you know, the behind the closed doors type thing.
Well, but see, that was the problem, is that there was so much of that this year that really the best way to see all that stuff was just getting on the internet and looking at it.
Right. I mean, that's when I was on the show floor, I said to myself, like, I could just see this stuff online, or I already had. So, but for me, it was just finally saying that I went, you know, than anything. And being at Comic-Con before, it kind of pales in comparison to that spectacle.
Well, years ago, E3 was a different beast.
Right.
The spectacle was off the charts. It was insane. Castles and wrestling rings and pro skater ramps and all right next to each other, and they were all competing for attention. And that's pretty much all gone away. It used to be crazy, and you could get your hands on the games. Like, you could actually, there are so many stations you could get your hands on it, and it wasn't like that this year. It was
I'd play a lot of games before I went in, and there wasn't many terminals to actually try things out.
No, there wasn't.
Yeah.
And most of the stuff was, you had to wait in line to see some behind the wall type of demo. Mm-hmm. And I didn't need to do that because I seen it on game trailers.
Right, exactly.
So what is it exactly? You like wait in lines, you can see a monitor and they play a video game or play you a clip of somebody playing the video game then?
In a lot of them, yeah.
Oh, that's kind of lame.
But they also had like rooms where like you could, they had 10 people and they would sit you down and you would all 10 of you would play. So it just depended on the booth.
Yeah. I think the best thing that I saw was the vintage video game collection. I mean, I had more fun looking at that. Yeah, exactly. All the old consoles, some of the kind of failed stuff, and the old video games and memorabilia. That was fun. But
I did get my hands on a couple things, and that I thought was interesting. I got my hands on the console version of Diablo 3.
Oh, I saw that. Yeah, is it?
And yeah. I thought it worked way better.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because that kind of that feeling of pounding on the button to get the attack to work, mm-hmm. felt mm-hmm. better than or a combo felt better than just like clicking.
I see.
And then they've added this dodge mechanic using the other stick. So you're shooting with one, and if somebody's getting near you, you could dodge out of the way. So it kind of felt even Batman-y in a way, where you're defending and attacking. And I just thought it felt a little more exciting.
Is this the first time that Blizzard's released a console for game for I mean a game for consoles or
I think they did it a long time ago with like World of Warcraft 1 or something. There was some console crap version. Okay. Yeah, and then they were trying to develop that game called Ghost.
Right, the shooter.
Yeah, it was a third. It was a third-person game, and I had actually gotten my hands on that when that was at E3. But yeah, this is kind of their big thing. I thought it played great.
Okay.
So I don't know. I mean, I've bought Diablo 3 and just got bored with it. But I could see like laying down on the couch with the controller and just kind of casually going around picking up loot.
I mean, those type of games aren't really my thing, you know.
Well, that's the other thing is this felt a little less crunchy.
It felt
more like a more advanced Gauntlet.
Well, but there's a lot of grinding that goes on in those.
Well, it's all about fighting and getting loot.
Yeah.
I mean, that's it, right? And the other fun thing about the console version is that if your friends are over, you can all play on one screen a la Gauntlet style.
Oh, that's cool.
So you can all sit around and fight creatures and drink beer and collect loot. I mean, that's kind of all those games really are.
Right, right. They're not going to be cross-compatible, are they? Between
No. But anyway.
Yeah. Okay.
So what's the truth of the thing with the, I know that the new, what was it, PlayStation or Xbox? Sorry, not my area of geek specificness.
PlayStation 4 and Xbox One are the two.
Okay, the Xbox One. I thought that I heard something where you guys were all worried that you weren't going to be able to lend games or share games, but they're saying that they're not going to put that sort of DRM on there. Is that correct?
No, well, okay, so... In case, for some reason, anybody is kind of unclear about this, and I think the media has been doing a really shit job about this. Mm-hmm. You know, Xbox, it got leaked way before that Xbox was going to have a heavy DRM mechanism on their box, and so that you couldn't use games on the Xbox, and that includes lending the games to your friends. It's pretty much the same thing. It's, you know, use games for free.
Right.
And so all hell broke loose before E3, and they pretty much stuck to their guns, although they did say, they came clean that if the developer wants to, they can opt out of that. Like, if they want to make it so that used games could be played, that the developer could do that. But they are making the mechanism so developers can... Essentially, Xbox took the hit because developers are the ones that don't want used games. Xbox doesn't give a shit.
Right.
I mean, they get a little bit of money, but...
Well, I think, though, it's changing, though. The paradigm's shifting. So they're putting all their chips down on this is going to be... Everything's going to be digital, which kind of also neutralizes the used game industry.
But that's separate. They wouldn't have gotten... If they would have said, hey, by the way, you could download everything. You never have to go to the store again. People would go, hooray, because that has automatic DRM. You can't lend that to your friends anyway.
No, but I'm saying the whole nature of Xbox One, I think they're betting on that being phased out. That's what the whole internet connection controversy that they're talking about as well. Because there's two things going on. There's the, you know, has to be... Now it was like you always have to have an internet connection, but they came back and said, well, you have to check in every 24 hours
online,
in a sense. Or
And that's what all, you know, that's what... I mean, that's what Adobe does.
Right. Well, right. That's true.
So, I mean, this is not new.
I've been a big Steam user on the PC side for years. I'm all for digital downloads, but I think... Some people, there's a whole market out there, a whole industry for used games. You know, GameStop sells them.
Right, and I buy them all the time.
Exactly. So I think even if this whole thing where you couldn't use used games wasn't an issue, I think they're betting on the industry going all digital eventually anyway. And so that industry will fade. That part of the industry will fade away.
Yeah, which takes that away. Now, what happened was is PlayStation, who then made their announcement, you know, 5 hours later,
right? They
said, "Oh no! You can play used games on ours. We're not gonna prevent you." And so they looked like the hero. But what they didn't tell you was that the developer could put a lock on it. They said, if the developer wants to do that, then they can do that. Now, whether a developer right now, with all the, you know, the negative press, would actually go ahead and do that, I don't think they would anymore. But will they do it on an Xbox? Because they can opt out on the Xbox. So the only thing that they've done is the Xbox has taken the hit for the developer. They've become the bad guy.
And it's happened quickly, and you see now people going, I'm definitely going to buy a Sony, you know, PlayStation, and I'm not, you know, I'm getting away from Microsoft. And
right,
just after this controversy, which is, it's all been blown out of proportion, in my opinion.
Yeah, and it's stupid because, A, we've still got 6 months, and everything could change.
Right. So does that mean that PlayStation, then, is, like, not going to go with the DRM thing?
That's what they say, but again, if they also say that if a maker of a game wants to put DRM on theirs, they're going to allow it.
And Sony's track record has always been proprietary stuff. So
yeah, they're the worst at it.
Yeah, exactly.
So one's going opt-in, one's going opt-out, and it's all good either way.
Exactly. But what it makes the Xbox look like the bad guy. The deal is it's the same policy almost.
Right. But we've seen what happens with bad press with DRM. SimCity would be a great recent example of that.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It almost sounds like they don't know what digital distribution strategy will be successful and how people will react. So they're just giving themselves a way out to change it down the line because no one wants to commit to anything specific.
Yeah.
Right.
That's true of any media, I think, with the whole digital distribution model. I mean, nobody knows how to stream. Nobody knows how to deal with VOD. I mean, everybody, even with social media, nobody knows how to actually monetize this as far as a formula is concerned. Different little experiments work, but...
But if they had just shut up about DRM and waited until digital download, that it all would have been solved.
Who do you think they're really announcing this stuff for? Is it like a professional, like corporate thing where they're trying to let the business world know that they're still thinking about this, so they're viable to other companies as far as a distribution platform? Or do you think that they're pointing it out because they're trying to keep themselves from being liable for copyright infringement? Or why do you think they are bringing it up?
They aren't bringing it up. It got leaked, and everyone started bitching about it.
Oh, gotcha.
They wouldn't have said shit if they could have avoided it.
Yeah.
you would have opened up your Xbox and you would have said, sorry buddy, you can't use games, and that would have been the first time you'd ever heard or hear of it.
Well, I suppose maybe then it's damage control, because that would have been a what the F, you know.
Well, Xbox kind of stuck to their guns, really. They did say, you know, if you know, it doesn't have to be that way, but most developers want it that way. And then now I think the developers are like, well, we didn't say that.
Well, so, right. No one wants to take that blame.
Right. Know? And here's the truth now, is we finally come to the year where we really do have one console. Mm-hmm. Because the Xbox and the PlayStation is almost the exact same box.
Right.
So now we're talking about features and software, like what is each of these boxes, which are almost the exact same thing, what are they going to give you that's plus the game? And even though people were bitching about the Xbox, talking about, you know, TVs and all this stuff, well, what else are they going to talk about? They're going to announce the same exact games that the PlayStation is. If those of you who think that Xbox is not going to be able to play every single game that was announced for the PlayStation 4, you guys are morons. They are they're playing the same goddamn games. So the fact that they talk about something else besides the games means they're trying to show you that in addition to the same shit you'll be able to get with your competitor, here's an additional thing that you might want to have that would tip you to buy that instead of the other thing.
Well, I think for these, I'm assuming it's even a younger crowd, it becomes more, it's a branding thing, like Coke and Pepsi back in the day. All they care about is the games, and it's their loyalty to this brand almost.
Well, what about the whole like interactivity Kinect thing? Is there an equivalent on the other side of the fence, like the hand controlled interactive?
Yeah, PlayStation has one, but it's not being shipped with the PlayStation.
Where now, finally, Xbox is shipping their Kinect, I believe, with the system.
Yeah,
it's all.
I think you almost have to at this point, because so many of the smart TVs have this sort of not just app empowered TV interface that goes straight to the web, but it also has that whole hand motion controlled remote kind of access thing.
Yeah, we'll see if anybody buys any of that crap.
Yeah, I don't know.
Keeping up with the Joneses, I don't know.
I mean, I still think the PC looks the best in the end. I mean, I keep going back to it as a gaming console. Because like you just said, all the games come out for everything.
And right. Well, now, but now you're getting to the point where you you really have one console. The PC, the Xbox, and the PlayStation are all the same freaking thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And when digital distribution becomes 100% on all platforms, you know, it's really, they're really identical. And the PC can always do more, and the graphical performance is always higher. Mm-hmm. So, but it's more expensive.
We're going to see it get down to something like talent. In like so much as certain actors and certain musical talent go with certain studios, yeah, so to speak. Do you think there's going to be like, you know, certain actors and certain music will only be licensable to one platform or the other, and that's how they'll start that competition up again?
Like, well, the old studio system in Hollywood back in the day?
Well, they're doing
it. Our star. No, you can't have Bruce Willis do voiceover on Super Death Warfare 5, whatever the fuck it is. Or, excuse me, whatever the heck it is.
No, but they are doing that with the games. There are games that...
Are they released on both platforms?
Well, there are some games that are promising to only be on one or the other, and that's how they're trying to convince you.
Aha!
But sometimes these are exclusives that are like a six-month exclusive, and then it becomes available for all systems.
But, you know, that type of thing, you know, Call of Duty... Mm-hmm. It came out for the Xbox first for 6 months or whatever it was, and that killed it. Now the Xbox is essentially the way of playing it on the consoles. Like, if you're going to play, you know, Call of Duty on a console, you don't get the PlayStation version. You get the Xbox version. And that was because people wanted to make sure that they were there day one, being there in competition, and they didn't want to wait 3 months for everybody to get on the game.
But to be fair, Microsoft has had a better platform for online gaming, a better community.
Right. I agree.
Yeah, so I think that also helped when you're talking about online, you know, multiplayer games. But
I'm excited. I'm buying an Xbox for sure. And
the VCR?
I wish it was a VCR. I wish it was a DVR. Why don't they have that?
Yes, I agree. I wish it had a cable card in there.
Yeah.
And yeah.
What's the they couldn't get the licensing, obviously.
No, it's the problem. No one can break this duopoly or monopoly that the, you know, telecommunication companies have.
Well, TiVo did it. They still have cable card. You can get a cable card crap and all that. Yeah.
Aren't they just a recording mechanism? They don't actually stream any sort of content personally. They're not a cable provider. They are.
Well, no, they are. They Xbox has HBO Go, Netflix. It's got Google. It's got all that.
So do TVs, though. But my point is like, isn't TiVo just like a recorder? It's like Sony or anything else back in the day when you would buy.
No, it's not, because it needs to have a. All that digital information about when to record and all that stuff, that all comes from the cable. You have to license that stuff.
But so TiVo doesn't hook up to HBO, like doesn't hook up to Dish or Direct, depending on what you subscribe to. It only does one.
Well, it depends if they've made the deal with those companies. It does.
I think some of these systems just overlay their, and this was happening with Xbox again. I think it just overlays their system onto your cable.
That's fine, but if it could then record or something.
Yeah, I'd like to see a whole integration thing where we can get rid
that
of.
That would be good.
Yeah, we all would like that, or a subscriber based.
Yeah, I mean, I think the real challenge is that the content is still owned by a very, very small number of people. So no matter how many hardware devices you have, all the content sort of locked up. Like, you know, the big revolution in music wasn't so much the iPod. It was the fact that MP3 came in and sort of broke that lockup of music. And that hasn't really happened in video, because the video is so controlled and there's not enough independent or high quality independent content to sort of facilitate, you know, open distribution on multiple platforms. So I think until the content sort of gets free, you're going to have all these, you know, hardware manufacturers that are scrambling over buying up exclusive content, but ultimately their product is, you know, sort of offering the same thing. They all have very similar hardware specifications. The hardware is almost the commodity at this point. So the people who own the content have a lot of power, I think. And that's when you sort of end up with these crazy disconnected deals where you can't, you know, watch everything on different devices.
Right. It's annoying.
Don't hold your breath.
Yeah. Hey, Simpty, standards are great. Everybody should have one.
I agree.
All right, enough about E3 and that craziness. Okay. Anybody have anything else geeky happen to him this week?
I don't know how geeky totally this is, but I went to go see Epic yesterday in 3D, and it was pretty freaking epic. I'll tell you that. It was very, very well done. And, you know, I know it's not a very well-known, or maybe it is a well-known movie release, but it was one of those things that kind of got hidden in the weeds, so to speak. And, you know, I'm a huge animation fan, and my dad was here for Father's Day, and he's a big animation fan, too, so he, you know, sucked it up and went to a 3D movie with me, because I rarely go to the flatties. And it was really, really well done. I think they really used...
Are you talking from a 3D standpoint? Is that when you say that?
From several standpoints. I think that the story was pretty well written as well. I have actually been working on something that was not similar, but sort of similar. My great aunt told me stories when I was little, and told my mom the same stories when she was growing up, because my great aunt, whatever. And they were stories kind of based on old world country mythology, and, you know, kind of her making up her own stuff from being, you know, growing up in Iowa and playing in the woods and whatnot. So we had these stories about fairies and little people living in the woods. And so I've been trying to write this movie about it for years, but it's trying to remember all of her old stories and find a compelling through line to make it a good story arc. But I was interested in this movie when I saw it come out, and I think that they did a pretty darn good job of making it an interesting story arc. I think that it had some good storytelling elements that use 3D to tell the story in a more immersive, intimate sort of way. And I also think the visuals were great by themselves, and I think the dialogue was snappy, you know. And it was a musical, but it wasn't a musical. Like, it had one song. And for having Beyoncé be, like, the lead character.
Oh, really?
One song only in the whole thing that was, like, the musical piece. And it wasn't even, like, a, you know, it wasn't a Can You Feel the Love Tonight, and it wasn't, like, a... you know, a big grand musical number with everybody, but not in that sort of 50s, 60s sort of musical
tradition
kind of way. Right. It was just kind of, and then there was this song that's part of this ritual, and it happened to be appropriate and served its purpose and was melodic and kind of catchy. And yeah, so I dug. It was cool.
I actually did see it.
Did you?
You forgot you saw it?
No, I've been waiting for her to finish. Because I had the absolute opposite reaction that
really?
You did.
Okay.
And almost fell asleep. And
that's because you saw it in 2D, man.
Well, that's what I was asking. You know, Shannon, that's what I was asking you, if 3D maybe changed the film for you. But yeah, I felt it was derivative, and it was very trying for me. Maybe I'm not the demographic. But I don't fall asleep in films very often, and this was one where I was having trouble keeping myself awake, because I just thought it was painfully boring. But that's so harsh. I feel so harsh saying that. I think I even have a friend that's worked on it too, so I feel bad saying that. But
okay, so I guess you know, because like I said, my dad and I were sitting there, we were watching it, and it was just. There was so much depth in that movie, and being like the uber 3D geek that I am.
And you mean by depth in stereo or depth?
Yes, there was so much. Yes, there was so much stereoscopic depth. I mean, it was huge amounts of parallax in that film, and it didn't hurt. It felt really good. It seemed to use the follow of point of view and perspective and space in a really interesting way. And my dad and I were just sitting there watching it, and we're like, you know, we love animation, so we were watching this and thinking, oh God, this would be a great movie. I'd love to watch again. But I don't think it would be as good if it were at home. Like, he even said to me, a third of the way through the movie, how could you even do you think it would even be as good in 3D? And I was like, I don't know.
Well, you know, large parallax does not make a good movie. So
I didn't have that experience. So I mean, obviously that may change my, you know, perception of the film, but. From just a story point of view, and I had a different. I don't want to talk. We shouldn't get on Epic, because obviously this is not the topic of this episode. But I had problems. I had problems with the acting, specifically Beyonce and Colin Farrell. Like, I felt they were a little. I kept picturing them. you know, instead of the characters. I kept being taken out of the movie, listening to their voices.
I wouldn't say Beyonce was the greatest voice actress for this in the world. No, no. And I don't also mean by any stretch of the imagination to imply that because there was an added element of a lot of stereoscopic separation and parallax that it made it a better movie. No. I just mean...
Well, it could have been a better experience, though.
They played with the space in an incredibly interesting way, and it changed a lot, and it got really deep at times. Like, there was just so much going on for so many depth cues back into Positive Z that I really... Maybe it did help to have more things to pay attention to rather than just a flat presentation.
Yeah.
Hmm. Anyway.
Sorry.
Interesting.
So, but good, we have diverging opinions that will be helpful, I think, for this.
I'll wait till it comes out on HBO.
Yeah, because they stream 3D real good.
Yeah, well, whatever.
3D.
Whatever.
Well, I do have something geeky that I did this week, but I think if I admit to it, it might discredit me for the rest of the conversation.
No, please.
But I abandoned my iPhone this week and got a Windows phone.
Oh, whoa. I have a Windows phone as well.
A Nokia Lumia 920, and it's awesome.
That's what I have. Cool.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, I don't use a lot of apps, so obviously if you need apps, it's probably not where to go. But it does this amazing sort of social aggregation where I'm ending up with all these contacts that I don't actually have phone numbers for, but I communicate with them on Twitter and Facebook and LinkedIn. And the phone does an amazing job of sort of pulling everyone's sort of social profiles into one place so I can actually keep track of what people are doing and, or, you know, not lose track of everyone and, you know, miss something that they're up to because they, you know, post on Twitter and not on Facebook. And so I've just found it to be awesome, and plus because the new sort of Mac iOS 7 looks a bit like a, you know, Lisa Frank Trapper Keeper, I had to just out of good faith abandon the iPhone after all these years.
Wow, you may be one of the first people
to admit to that,
to go from to go from an Apple product back like to Windows. Like I've been PC for a while, so I'm a bit biased, and I have the same model you do. So I know exactly what you're talking about. They do integration really well for contacts, social media.
Yeah, Apple's looking very old-fashioned.
Yeah, the design, the UI design's getting dated for Apple.
But even that, but just having like not like you know, Apple announces new icons. Like I don't care that the color is, you know, hot colors now and on all white. I love the fact that like a Windows phone's icons or tiles or whatever are kind of alive and give me information before I even open up the damn app.
It's helpful. Know? It's quicker. First of all, you can just glance down at your phone and not have
You know, Apple has these dead icons. They're buttons. They're old school toggles and buttons, and that looks ancient now. It's
also, you know, just very slow. I mean, you know, it's really nice to be able to just see what the weather is going to be by glancing at your phone versus having to launch an app. And sure, maybe the app is beautiful and there's a snowstorm in the background, but I don't really care about that. I just want to know what the temperature is like really quickly.
Right.
There's, you know, a convenience to that I think is really, really nice.
And the Lumia's camera is pretty solid as well. I'm not sure it's the best, but it's
well, that's the one thing is that the I do love the iPhone's camera. It's pretty freaking amazing.
The iPhone 5?
Well, I have the 4S, and I think that's, like, amazing. Okay. I'm just shocked.
I've shown the iPhone's camera for years. They're shooting movies with it now and actually building rigs that use old 35mm glass, and you just use the iPhone itself to snap in and out as a chip for acquisition and memory storage.
What in the world? Why would you do that? That's just kind of
gimmicky. The sensor is incredibly sensitive and well calibrated. Mm. Put some decent glass in front of it, you're actually getting some good looks. I mean, and it's cheaper and faster and more effective and sensible than buying, like, you know, sometimes additional
real camera.
Cameras. Yeah. I mean, if you think about it.
Sounds a little gimmicky, but.
Okay.
I mean, you know, it's still pretty compressed stuff, but I don't know. Maybe
I guess it depends on the recording software that you end up deciding to use, because a chip is a chip.
Oh, I see.
Position software is another situation entirely.
Oh, I see. You're saying they're not using, they're just using it as the chip as a pass through, and then they're recording it, like maybe uncompressed somewhere. I guess that's
on the camera itself or on the phone itself. But the point being that because it's got such a good debarring and a good sensitivity in the chip itself, it ends up being a great acquisition tool if you put good glass in front of it. And it's cheaper than having, you know, anything of the same basic, you know, quality. If, I mean, we're not recording 4K or anything, but.
Right.
Not yet. Well, yeah. I do wish when they were making their announcement that they would, that the OS 7 was a little more, a bigger step away from what they had besides just a color palette change.
Anybody looked at Mavericks yet?
Oh, the new OS 10. It doesn't seem much of a
negligible.
It's fine.
Jesse, are you still on? Are you still on Apple products for your PC, for your computer?
Not exactly. I mean, I was always sort of, you know, from 1996 on till probably like 2010, I was the biggest Apple fan ever. And then at the point when they sort of killed Final Cut Pro and switched
right.
to X, professionally, it didn't really work for what I was doing, so I switched over to Premiere.
Cool.
And then I switched to a PC because I couldn't, you know, they didn't update the Mac Pros for so long, and I'm actually doing a lot of stuff with like Cinema DNG and like 14-bit images and really, really high color space and resolution content, and I just couldn't get a Mac that would sort of support it, so I ended up building my own PC.
Cool.
So I still have a Mac laptop, but I've basically
transitioning
over. I'm sort of fleeing from Mac at this point.
Wow. Yeah. You are a rare bird.
I mean, it was...
or maybe more and more people are doing that. I don't know.
I agree with you entirely. I mean, my realm of application is highly specialized. Most of the PC, most of the stereoscopic programs are available in PC and not available in Mac, especially, you know, Premiere has had more flexibility until recently on a PC platform, as well as, you know, Sony Vegas and a bunch of other stuff. But I find that it's just so much cheaper, and especially since the integration of the Intel chip. I mean, why am I spending the extra money if I can just get a program that's going to be less expensive? And I don't know, Mac doesn't seem to be terribly interested in being an early adopter of experimental. I mean, they want everything to be streamlined, and I understand why, because it's plug and play. It's really easy. That's great. You know, I don't have the same issues that I do if I try to use something that was PC-based, but I don't know. I just feel like at this point in digital media creation, we're really at sort of a bleeding edge technology, you know, threshold where you need to have that sort of experimental mindset. And
yeah. Yeah, it's very tricky, I think, with Apple products right now, too. I mean, I know everyone, you know, there's, you know, they're sort of very well designed in the way they are sort of visually and they appear, but when it comes to actually trying to upgrade parts of your computer, replacing parts of your computer, if something fails, it's very difficult if you're actually in an environment where you need to replace it as quickly as possible to do it yourself with a lot of the Apple hardware. And for me, that's a problem that I kind of see as a professional, is that I want to be able to fix my computer myself if it fails. I don't want to have to give it away to someone and lose it for an X amount of time. And so that's really, you know, I like to know that I can fix it myself. And
yeah.
Mac products, that's not guaranteed at this point.
Yeah,
and
but
aren't they moving away from
the
Intel chipsets anyway? I thought that was the rumor. So that is...
Well,
so
they haven't.
That's not going to happen. Okay. I thought they were going to make an A chipset for the desktop, and they were going to get away from Intel, but maybe I misheard.
Either way, anytime you break open a Mac seal, you're pretty much violating the warranty, even if, you know, they've said you officially can, what is it where you hack an iPhone?
Jailbreak
it.
Didn't the Supreme Court rule that jailbreaking an iPhone was legal, but still you invalidate the warranty, so it doesn't matter?
I think we're talking about two different things. I mean,
I agree, but getting into any kind of self-use on a Mac rather than just taking an Apple product into those licensed dealers. You can't even upgrade your own memory.
Yeah. And even when you can, sometimes it's very expensive. Like, I had a G5 tower and the power source burned out, but because it was a very specific Apple-only power source, it was right. something like $500 to replace it.
But are you joking? Really?
But remember, that nothing has changed from the beginning of that.
No.
It's
not like
this.
It's not like this suddenly happened.
They're a closed system. Everything's designed specifically for... It started to change, though. That's why I brought Intel up, because that's when things started to shift. That's when you saw more Mac users doing dual boot systems or even Hackintoshes.
True. But one of the biggest problems that I think this is a huge problem because... everybody, you know, in my office is talking about it, is that they didn't upgrade the Mac for 3 fucking years.
But did they need
I know.
To?
Well, yeah, they needed to. I mean, of course. I mean, if you're professional and every time a new computer or a program is coming out and every time a new movie is coming out and they want this new special effect, so you have to put in another three more, Your render farm's got to grow and all this stuff. And you're really thinking, should I buy another Mac that's 3 years old?
Right.
I mean, that's what you're thinking.
And I think for me, for a while, like when I had, like, I really liked Final Cut, and that was the only option. I mean, it was, you know, that was what you used. But at the point, there were more options, you know, the proprietary system and not being able to get the latest hardware. Just, you know, at a point, it all kind of built up so that when there were options, you know, I think that's good to always be reevaluating what you're doing.
Yeah.
But do you think with, like, Final Cut that, you know, they're releasing, you know, they released Final Cut for 300. It's changed a bit since it originally came out. There's a whole bunch of people who are using it who never would have been able to buy a professional one, kind of in a semi-professional or even, you know, at home, or even children, you know, young kids, that they're going to grow up now being more interested in using that than something like Premiere.
It's possible. I mean, I think that, you know, obviously there's a market for all of these different software packages and different price points. Otherwise, they wouldn't exist. I think for me, just for what I do, it just no longer filled the need. So, yeah, I mean, I suppose, you know, the reason I probably got into editing in the first place was because iMovie came out and it was, I think it came with your computer, it was free, like in, you know, whatever, 2000, way back when. And, you know, that was sort of the first... you know, interaction I had, and that's why I went from iMovie to Final Cut, and that sort of brought me into the system that they were offering. So I think that, yeah, people will certainly stay with that product line until they outgrow it. But I do think if you're trying to do some of the higher end work with, you know, different cameras and color correction and grading and working with, you know, file formats that aren't quite as friendly to the all-in-one workflow.
But I would say the color correction in that's better than Premiere, though, isn't it?
Not now.
No way, man. I'm sorry, but Premiere actually Adobe just bought SpeedGrade. And SpeedGrade had two pieces to it. One, SpeedGrade was the earliest piece of the software, which was SpeedGrade Iridos. And it's actually one of the more professional color correction tools available and has been used for, you know, 10, 15 years. After that, they adopted a company called Iridos, which was stereoscopic correction tools. And for a long time, well, long time being about 5 years, Iridos and SpeedGrade became fused into one product, which was stereo and color sweetening and correction. And then Adobe acquired it, and the first step was integrating SpeedGrade, the color correction software, into their suite. And the second piece is integrating their stereoscopic tools. So it's really a much more advanced color correction tool than even Color is in Final Cut. So in a way, Premiere has sort of surpassed themselves.
Yeah, and I actually use DaVinci Resolve for color correction because I'm working with Cinema DNG, which isn't really supported by Premiere, even though it's the format they sort of came up with. So I'm doing sort of like a round trip between DaVinci Resolve and Premiere, and that sort of connection doesn't flow as well, I think, at least in the past when I've looked at it in sort of Apple products.
Ugh, boy.
Jack? An object came down in 1-7.
Got it. On my way.
60 years ago, Earth was attacked. We won the war, but they destroyed half the planet. Everyone's been evacuated. Nothing human remains. Our job is security and drone maintenance. We're the mop-up crew.
2 more weeks, Jack, and we can leave and join the others.
Doesn't seem right. We won the war. Now we have to leave.
Okay, the topic is Oblivion, the movie, came out 2 months ago. Spoiler warning, if you haven't seen this movie, you should turn it off now, but when it comes out on video, go pick it up and then come back to this this episode. We will be ruining things for you.
I plan on it, so.
And this discussion. Yeah. Well, it's been out long enough.
Yeah, you know, I mean.
We try to dance around some of the movies when they just come out, but this is just, it's been out a while, so.
And enough people didn't see it where I think the public has spoken. They don't really care, so we might as well just say what we want.
Right, exactly. Well, you know, I'll just start out by saying, I had heard all these reviews about how boring it was and slow and you know what I a lot of kind of poor got a poor reception for the movie. I being a graphic designer, I had seen the trailers and at least wanted to see the movie through a graphic design sense, because it to me it looks like something like a movie Johnny Ives directed. You know, it looks like Apple just went in there and, like, you know, designed all the house and the vehicles and stuff. So I just wanted to see what the design was like. Sure. Really.
And you know why that is, right? You know, the director, he actually has a background in mechanical engineering, industrial design, and architecture. Like, that's what he did before he got into filmmaking.
Well, you can definitely see it in the movie. That is for sure.
Sure.
And the music and the movie is beautiful, but so I went there, I guess, not really expecting much, and I really liked the movie. Mm-hmm. I thought it was pretty damn good. I mean, it's not a perfect movie, and there are some problems with it, but man, I just don't get where the reviews, what the reviewers were having a problem with.
I was gonna say, I actually felt sort of the same way, but maybe for different reasons. I thought the same thing, that I. You know, reading the reviews, it seemed like it was just going to be a terrible film. But I actually really enjoyed it. And largely the reason I enjoyed it was because I, you know, it is pretty derivative sci-fi. But mm-hmm. if you are into sci-fi of sort of the 60s and 70s, it's this, I don't know, it's like this really sort of nostalgic nod towards all of these films that, you know, I almost felt like a little bit like Tom Cruise is the new Charlton Heston. And I'm kind of okay with that. Like, I kind of love that sort of feel of, you know, revisiting those nostalgic films. So I thought that was nice.
So do you think...
And go ahead.
I was just... You said, you obviously, you're pointing... You say Heston, so I think of Planet of the Apes. And they do show a statue, the torch in the... You think that was like a small little homage to that film? I mean...
Yeah, I mean, I actually think that this film homaged a lot of films, and that actually I think a lot of reviewers missed, probably because they haven't spent as much time watching bad sci-fi as I have.
That's the problem. They're used to watching really shitty sci-fi, which they've been seeing the last couple of years. It's like every Transformer movie to them.
Which is
that's
really
science
action
fiction.
Movies. Yeah, exactly. Right. They're bad schlock action movies by Michael Bay, for example. Right, but this is an actual science fiction film. We don't get many of these in the last, 10-13 years. It's been very few. So I think that's a good point. People just weren't aware of what they were necessarily watching. And I think he's been on record saying he grew up watching those 60s or specifically 70s science fiction films. And
it's
he
really
was
the 70s.
And he was influenced by those as a kid. Like even Empire Strikes Back, he mentions, and that's a little bit later, but he says the whole drone thing kind of came from that he was deathly scared, you know, in the beginning of the film, that drone, this mindless drone.
Oh, the Hoth.
And during Hoth, right, exactly.
I was going to say, I think one of the Charlton Heston, just to jump back to that, films that it pretty well sort of looks at is, I think, Omega Man is a pretty, you know, there's a lot pulled from that. There's a lot pulled from Planet of the Apes. I think there's quite a bit, even from, like, Solaris. Like, I think this idea of having a cabin, you know, in this green, lush area is sort of a Solaris nod. And then I think that, you know, there's a 2001 Space Odyssey theme going on, obviously, with sort of the way the robots are. It has this really nice, you know, 70s sci-fi arc that, you know, I think a lot of times modern sci-fi is all about sort of lens flares and action movie and, like, cold blue palette. But, like, in the 70s, the sci-fi genre that I really like is when it's about the insider becoming the outsider by realizing that the society they believe in and the things that they think they stand for are not actually true. And I think that arc is sort of quintessential to a lot of the 70s sci-fi films that happened. And I thought it was really nice to see that revisited and explored in this film.
Right. And you know, and especially in a world where audiences are way more sophisticated than they used to be. Like you could get away with Twilight Zone type stories back in the day, and that's harder and harder to do now because we see it coming a million miles away. And even though you kind of saw some, you know, you kind of saw the surprises rolling up as they came, there were, you know, they kind of changed it up.
Yeah,
you know, you went on the journey with the character of Discovery.
I thought that's one of the issues though that I had was the film definitely thought it was smarter than it was a bit. So a lot of those twists I did see coming. I don't know if that's a problem. That's my issue or the film's issue. I think from a design standpoint, a technical standpoint, the film's gorgeous. I think from some of the writing's a bit clunky.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I guess so. You know, but the thing is you go into that movie, you go into those movies now going, okay, what's the twist?
Oh, right.
And it used to be you could go and watch Planet of the Apes and at the end go, oh, you're shitting me.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now if you see humans landing on, you know, a Planet of the Apes, you're like, well, geez, something's got to be up. And you're automatically tipped off knowing that there's, and even though I knew there was shenanigans going on.
Don't use my name in vain.
I'm sorry, Shannon. even though I knew that there was some of that was going on, usually it was, before I got, you know, knew the specifics, you know, I kind of caught on only moments before.
Oh, really?
Okay. You know what I mean? Especially toward the end when they kind of did the, like, there was kind of like a double flipperoo in a way.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I thought that was okay. I mean, again, I wasn't like shocked. Like, I wasn't like, oh my God, you got to be kidding me.
Right.
But I was like, okay, you know, I didn't, you know, it's fine. I got, that's cool.
It's a film that I left thinking, like, I had so much, for me, I had a lot of hopes for this film because I love science fiction. And so I think I was let down a bit. But these past few months, it's stuck with me more than a film that's mediocre, usually just I forget about. Mm-hmm. So I feel like, yeah, this film, even though it has, despite its flaws, I actually did really enjoy it overall. I think I can overlook some of the twists that I saw coming for what the larger picture is and the larger design of it. And
so, okay, let's talk a little bit about kind of what do you think this kind of meant, like the story meant? Do you think that it really had a message at all, or was it just trying to pull a Twilight Zone on us and then that was good enough?
I totally disagree with you guys. I'm sorry.
now you just saw you just saw it today. You saw it like like an hour,
I saw
2 hours
it a few
ago.
Hours
right?
ago, I had the day off miraculously, and it was like okay. And then you know, Clint mentioned that you guys were going to do this thing tonight, and my roommate had seen it, and I love to discuss all things movie. So I thought it would be cool to check it out, but I felt really strongly that although it did feel very much like something that would be sort of Isaac Asimov, Arthur Clarke, I'm reading it. It's got this little twist, and the robots definitely had that sort of faceless
Asimovian logic.
Conqueror kind of sci-fi feel to it. It felt really good. I honestly felt like it threw back to more modern sci-fi films than a lot of the things that you were mentioning. I really felt akin to The Moon, maybe even with Sam Shepard. Or
but you don't think The Moon felt like an old Twilight Zone?
Right. Yeah.
I mean, that to me, The Moon is not like a like something you would see today.
Story-wise, perhaps, but its stylistic approach, and I mean, okay, so I've been reading over the last maybe 10, 15 years, reading all these different reviews on sci-fi and horror and fantasy and how all of these alternative genres that we connect with really sort of reflect the public opinion of what our deepest seated fear is.
Sure.
You know, for a while it was like natural disaster movies and it was aliens.
It was atomic creatures.
Right, right. But I feel like the idea of being mind effed or, you know, like having a cybernetic augmentation to the human form or mind control or cloning or drones, it captures public opinion a lot, especially with drones and the war in Iraq and whether or not these are things that have a soul and a heart. Are they qualified and equipped to be able to go out and do our killing for us because they don't have any sort of like prescient conscious to them? I felt like it really reflected a lot of modern issues, and maybe that was just a very well chosen topic for this particular film, but I felt it was much more of a present decision than it was something that was sort of a retro throwback. I also felt like the clean feel to it sort of tipped me off from the beginning. I felt really uncomfortable right from the beginning because there was this incredible juxtaposition between the planet Earth and, the clean sort of perfection 2001 feel of their living space. And I guess that was good filmmaking, that they made me feel really sort of uncomfortable. I'm not saying it wasn't a good film, but I felt story-wise that I knew right away there was something going on that just wasn't cool with the Tom Cruise movie thing, where he's just this lone soldier doing his job. But I also felt that there were moments as we went along where I was really compelled and lulled into feeling like there was a really good mystery being built up. Like, what was this really great secret that this well-developed character was looking towards? And I kind of got really let down at the end because it was like we spent three-fourths or four-fifths of the movie getting there. And then all of a sudden it was like, oh, and this chick, and here she is, and she's your wife. And then, you know, you're a clone and blah, 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 blah. And then, oh, we'll wrap it all up at the end and Morgan Freeman is in the box. Yay! And it just kind of was shoved all into the end. And it was sort of the letdown on my part. I mean, it wasn't as though I didn't see it coming kind of in that, you know, everything is saved at the 11th hour kind of way that always happens, but it just didn't seem, it seemed like they could have portioned their reveal a little bit better.
The film definitely sped up at the, like, yeah, like two-thirds in, it definitely went like high octane, and that's kind of where all the action started kicking in. That's probably some of the points that I kind of got bored were,
That's when it didn't work.
Right,
I agree. The action is where it didn't work. The mystery and the more kind of intellectual portion of it is the part that worked better.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, I agree with that. I actually think my critique of the film is sort of that it tried to do too much, and in doing that, it sort of didn't expand on the really good ideas that it did have. Like, I actually thought that the concept that someone would be, you know, sort of in this, you know, sleep state for 50 years, come back and find the person who they'd been in love with as a clone. I thought that was like a fantastic.
Right. And they don't, like, we never see her point of view ever.
Right. Exactly. Like, this is an amazing concept. Like, you know, that's like something worth exploring, and it just never went anywhere.
I mean, we get one hint at it, like of her reaction, I think, to kind of accepting who Jack now is. Like, right. she accepts him as her husband near the very end. And, like, I think we get that when Morgan Freeman
accepted him from the beginning. She didn't even frickin' ask, nor did it matter. I'm sorry, there was no internal struggle as a character. No question as to whether or not she was in love with this guy. She was just trying to, like, get his, like, memories to resurface, and it doesn't fucking matter if he's a clone, if he's an alien, who he is. She's, you know, like, reconnecting with this person. And I mean, okay, coming out of shock, 60 years, whatever, identify and connect with whatever you can, but...
Well, I've watched this twice, actually, this film, and knowing the reveals kind of changes your perception of her acting. Her acting's very subtle. So I think, actually, first of all, she's on guard when she is found, and she doesn't know what to make of the situation, but she has some information the audience doesn't have, which is she knows that there was this alien object orbiting Earth.
And she knows that he was absorbed, or he was snatched.
No, wait a minute. Whoa. How does she know he was snatched? She doesn't. All she knows is she woke up 60 years later, and her husband is standing over her protecting her little, like, sleep box. She doesn't know any of the rest of that shit. She had to go back and get the recorder, otherwise she would have been able to talk about it. She didn't know anything.
It is a little weird that she didn't. It's a shame that the struggle between those two and the missing 60 years and all that wasn't more of a story. It is a shame that they didn't focus on that a little bit more.
Of course, for her, I guess it's not been 60 years. And for him, he has no really solid memories of the past. So I guess both of them don't really feel that time gap.
And who was the redheaded chick? Like, awesome, great. She was part of the team. She was his co-pilot. But who was she? Why did she care? Did she have a secret crush on Jack? Was there some...
Well, I think that's definitely implied. Yeah, it's implied. Yeah. Because that's why she laughs.
Fine, but why did she have the investment? I felt like character development was completely wasted. We had things like Bob, the bobblehead, that really made Jack feel human. And I think that was compensation if you were reading it as a piece of literature to make you feel like he was a human being when you later felt like he was a clone and you found that out. But it really didn't develop anything. Like, Jack blindly loves this redheaded woman, but he's got these dreams of somebody else. And chick that gets rescued blindly loves Jack, potential clone human being, after he says 60 years. And
I'm not sure it's blind. I think there's something that's like feeding him into like gravitating him towards this past. The him and his partner, they're probably designed, like, brainwashed to be in this relationship.
Right.
Now we know that she does have some kind of...
She emotionally reacts to it later. I mean, she actually has like a freaking meltdown. She's like, it's always been her, hasn't it? She has an emotional response to having Julia come back.
Well, so does Julia. Again, watching it again, when he, when they're at the table, the three of them are at the table for the first time. Obviously she remembers who the red haired girl, because they're all part of the same crew. And they go over, and I think they either kiss or they touch hands or something, and Jack's wife laughs. And at first I thought, when I was watching this, why is she laughing? That's odd. But knowing that she knows who those two people are, she probably knew that red-haired girl had had some feelings for her husband the entire time. That she's like,
what great background. Why was there nothing, even like a word, a glance, nothing to surface that into a deeper character development? I'm not talking pages of dialogue. I'm talking about a subtle bit of development that would have made the film a little bit more rich and less sterile.
Well, yeah, I mean,
I thought the development was really good because it was so subtle.
Yeah.
And you know, I agree. The movie is not perfect at all. But I mean, especially in the world of science fiction that we're in now, where people will go see... Star Trek II, which is a piece of crap.
I agree. I'm with you on that.
And has a character development that is moronic. Those type of, this is refreshing to me.
But yeah, there are pieces missing. I would agree.
I would agree.
And well, this director, Joseph, I forget his last name. He, you know, his, we have, I've seen Tron, and so we know his style is kind of the sterile style.
Car commercial? Like, that's all he did before he did Tron? He was a car commercial director.
Well, people's got to start somewhere, I guess.
Yeah.
No, I'm not saying that that's invalid. I'm just saying, obviously, if you're a car commercial director, wow, amazing way to be able to cast somebody or hire somebody who can get great promo shots of something that looks fucking or freaking amazing. But
I mean, the guy who did District 9 had only done some short films,
and he, you know, this guy's worked, he was under Fincher for a while. They like, he was his protege, so it's some training. I mean,
Well, where's all this human element then?
Okay.
Well, he's not a great. I'm not saying he's a great writer, but I think as a director and visionary.
So I actually think that Victoria, who's the redheaded character in the film, I actually really liked her character development a lot. And the reason I liked it so much was because I didn't understand sort of the dynamic that was going on until the very, very end. And, you know, the sort of tension in the relationship and the way they interacted with each other, and this sort of jealousy that I think was I think it was there through the whole film, mm-hmm. you know, between this idea of, you know, Tom Cruise, Jack, the character Jack, being in love with someone else and Victoria being very, very jealous of that. I think that the fact that when they're in, you know, the spaceship at the end, and you see her taking the picture, and there's this sort of very subtle moment where you realize that Victoria obviously has a thing for Jack, right. and that sort of personality trait is carried through when she's cloned, I actually thought was like a really nice commentary on, you know, you always think about cloning and what, you know, when someone, you clone someone, you know, there's always the argument of what actually happens to the personality. And so I thought it was actually sort of a nice tie-in where you actually do have their personalities sort of repeating.
There's like an echo of their, yeah.
And almost like it's interesting that maybe the aliens took all these seeds and made her perfect life, which was, you know, living alone with this guy that she was secretly, and knowing that they could keep them satisfied because,
well, you know, they misinterpreted. That was the genius of it, right? So right. they only see these two guys together. They interpret her emotions as being, they must be a couple.
Right.
And it's kind of like this flawed partartnership. And that's, I think, how Jack can even come out of it. You know, he
breaks the fog because he's not on board with the alien programming.
Right. And I think we're asking, what is this kind of, this commentary like on what is this story about, or what is this science fiction commenting on? I think at its core, it's probably just a character redemption story in a sense, and Jack, you know, becomes a human again, mm-hmm. in one sense of whatever that means. You know, he finds his humanity, and so I thought that was interesting. Like Duke, you know, it's always that idea of like man versus machine. You know, clones are kind of seen as, you know, we saw a lot of android and robotic stuff in the 80s, and mm-hmm. Like clone is kind of that new thing, I think, where are they just this soulless like copies, or do they have something else behind?
Yeah, because they you know, when he meets himself, you do have that internal, as a watcher, you know, you're wondering, okay, is he less of a character than the one we've been following the entire time?
Right.
Like, is he just as valid? So when if he gets punched or killed, are we seeing the death of a character that is just as valid as the one we've been following the entire time? And and even at the end, when mm-hmm. you know that there is more out there, and another one shows up, is he just as valid as the personal one that we've been following the entire time?
Well, the film would almost say that she does feel that way. It almost suggests that she's accepted this other clone.
I know. I do feel like that's. I'm a little. I like my heroes dead at the end of movies. It's a thing I love.
They definitely had the Last Samurai ending for this movie. I mean, it's identical. He comes back to the village in Last Samurai, and there's a longing moment between himself and the love interest, and it's the exact same ending. This is more of an aside for a Tom Cruise thing, but
but the ending did kind of, I think, for people who don't like their characters dead at the end, takes the sting out.
Well, sure, it's like, oh, it's okay, there's another copy of him. It's probably...
Well, that's what I mean.
Right, and that's kind of a problem, because the Jack that we knew had all these, like, he wasn't exactly the same as the clones, because, like Morgan Freeman's character said, or whatever, Beach, his name's something Beach, he found these books and was reading literature and found these old American relics that kind of started shaping his identity.
Right, he's somehow different.
Now, are they all finding little relics? Are they all finding novels and, like, you know, being shaped? Or is it just the one that we, number 50-something, you know, whatever, 49 or whatever his number was? Like
64.
64, thank you.
I have to say, in the middle, when they were in the library, I was like, I was thinking, is this a remake of Zardoz? And am I gonna like suddenly go, holy shit, I cannot believe they remade this movie.
I have to say that I really, I felt, and you know, this is my own lame-ass lack of follow-through procrastination geekness. I recently finished BSG.
Oh.
So I got mired in the middle of like season 3 and didn't finish it for like, you know, 3 or 4 years. And then I finally finished and then immediately started trying to watch Caprica, which,
oh, sorry.
It's got some interesting points. It's worth, I guess, trudging through only for canon's sake, but at the same time, all of these questions that we're talking about with, you know, copies and cloning and cyborg versus robot versus android validation, which is, once again, very much Arthur Clarke, very Asimovian, not so much Carl Sagan, I guess, but, you know, that sort of appeal to it, bent to it. I feel like I've been contemplating these notions a lot, and so I maybe kind of just skipped past some of those internal processes, and I looked at the people around them. And, okay, for example, Julia, she wakes up after 60 years. Yeah, you're right. That's pretty freaking subtle for seeing your husband completely just as he is, not entirely recognizing you, there being two of them, and then you realize that you've, and right in the middle of that, you realizing that you've been asleep for 60 years. Why is he so young? Like, she's got to know there's a lot of stuff going on right from the beginning. It was a very subtle reaction.
Well, I think when she awakes, she doesn't know 60 years has passed, and for all she knows that he's not dead or been taken, like you were said before. So
she asks how long it's been. He says 60 years.
So she's skeptical, and I guess if you're a scientist and you know there was an alien object floating around Earth, maybe she's just playing her cards close to her vest until she can figure out what's actually going on. So
apparently this is a sticking point to Shannon's getting past the rest of the...
I have an issue. Like, I just felt it was not to go there. Please, Aaron, forgive me. But, you know, it's the same kind of massive problem I had with Prometheus, is that I felt, you know, there is this issue where all aliens, Ridley Scott and whatever of the franchise films, are basically the exact same story arc. They are a story of a woman who is investigating and metabolizing the personal female arc of motherhood and preservation of life and children, and the sustenance of life and lineage. And I know that that sounds really insane, but if you really look at Aliens movies, that's what it's about. Whether you're talking about from the aliens' point of view or from... like the human point of view, it's all about preservation of species and preservation as a mother. And, you know, I never really gave a shit about this whole women's question thing until a couple of years ago. And then it was kind of brought to my attention that apparently it's like a thing. And I started really looking at it. And it's a very fascinating point of view and subject. Not that I want to harp on it, but I do start to look at some of these issues, and I specifically think about like the hormonal effect that certain biological processes have on you, like Ridley having a biological, or the other people in Prometheus, the other woman having a biological experience like pregnancy and childbearing and birth and an attachment to something else, in the same way that like this whole love and whatnot now can apply to this person that you suddenly just attach yourself to and trust, that comes back and happens to be a clone. I mean, we didn't spend enough time at the end to see how she dealt with this new Jack that comes back at the end of Oblivion. But we see that she seems pretty prepared to accept him as the mother of her child. A, she's not really, they don't even deal with the fact that some sort of weird alien grown Jack clone impregnated her. But also, we're just kind of go along with the fact that, you know, Jack Mark, potentially 2000, shows up and is like, hey, I'm just like your last boyfriend and the one before, so it's all good. I'm dad. You know, like, as a person, as a human being, she just, I'm just saying that not the film, but the entire arc of sci-fi seems to leave out the human element and focus on other human elements. And I think that it had certain pieces that were so tangible that it seemed really, her part just seemed so flat and fake that it ruined it.
Mm. Well, she can have her own movie.
Yeah.
Well, no, I get it. I agree. There's, you know, I did not think the movie was perfect at all. That is for sure. In fact, I think Clint and I talked right after I came out and I said, I liked it. It's not perfect. And, you know, that is for sure. I think if you go out and you see the DVD, find the DVD, or if you can get out there and see the movie again, it's definitely worth going to see if you're looking for science fiction in a summer filled with, quote, science fiction.
This was an actual science fiction film, you know, a la, like Jesse was saying, there's a lot of 70s influences. I mean, I would agree there. There's some Twilight Zone influences there. 2001 in particular and how it was shot, you know. He did a lot of in-camera techniques like Kubrick did back in the day. But, yeah, there's a lot of films in the last, like, 5 years with all the comic book movies. A lot of them aren't science fiction. They're just wrapped in a sci-fi setting, or they have the guise of it, but they're really action movies. There's a few films that are coming out this year that look like in the science fiction vein, so we get them here and there, but they're not on the forefront. I think, I don't know if Hollywood thinks they're not going to sell anymore or what.
I end up buying the movies, even if they're just okay, just to encourage that type of filmmaking.
Right.
So I actually buy the Blu-rays just to, you know, you vote with your dollars, and I'm voting for these type of movies, even if they don't knock them out of the park. So I probably will end up purchasing this movie. In fact, I just bought Cloud Atlas, and I haven't even.
I did too.
I haven't seen it yet.
I saw it twice in the theaters. I loved it.
I haven't seen it yet, but I bought it just in case.
That's another controversial kind of mixed reviewed film.
Right.
I was going to say, I think for me, like, one of the reasons that the movie is very successful is because it does sort of, you know, it's not a perfect film, but it does raise more questions than it answers. And for me, that's sort of the point of sci-fi, is that it allows you to have a discussion after the film. So it's, a lot of times for me, it's not so much about what's actually, you know, obviously I want the film to be enjoyable, but it's about the questions that it raises. And you start to think, you know, how you feel about the relationships in the film and how the people interact and the different, you know, decisions that a character makes, and you sort of put yourself in that space and try to figure out if it's realistic or not. Would a human actually do that if they were in a futuristic environment? And so for me, because it raises a lot of these questions, I thought that was, for me, like, what made it satisfying, especially not right after I saw it, but a few weeks later when I was sort of still thinking about it and considering, you know, where the film had gone.
Right, right. And I'm so glad the ending. I mean, I kind of saw it coming, but I was glad it wasn't, I guess we're spoiling everything. I'm just glad it wasn't an alien life form, like a biological alien life form. I was afraid they were going to get up there and they were going to be like little green men or something. And that's,
you really prefer a completely ambiguous, unidentifiable, inverted pyramid, giant floating HAL.
I like that.
Identifiable enemy that we're supposed to hate that actually, like, manipulated everybody.
Or like Portal. There's a lot of video game references in here as well, unless I'm just over, you know, maybe I'm reading into things, but I'm not saying from a design standpoint, but I'm saying that I'm glad that it's artificial intelligence. We're not sure if there's some other life form out there that has sent this thing around the galaxy. I mean, we're not given that information. There could be. It might not just be a totally artificial, you know, existence.
I'm glad I didn't see some weird creature, because
yeah, me too. There was such you never do it right.
Yeah, and there was such a mystery to them anyway. They were still a mystery. I liked that.
So you really felt like you could end up hating them in the same way that you're supposed to, because They took away Jack's life. They took away his love. They took away his potential to have a family, if you're talking about the specific Jack that we lose.
And they destroyed the human race.
And, yeah, destroyed Earth.
The human race, they destroy Earth.
So what is there not to hate?
But it's okay. You don't care that you actually never see a face to go along with this thing. You're just cool that it's like...
I think it's scarier, actually.
Yeah,
I thought it was more frightening.
Yeah.
I felt less human about it. I felt like I don't give a shit that... These things want to kill us. Like, I don't mind destroying. I don't mind at that final moment blowing up the tent. I don't mind blowing up the droids. I don't feel like I have to question myself as a human being and my humanity vis-a-vis compassion. Because, hey, I can just blow up whatever the heck I want because they're just machines.
Isn't that what's happening now in our own society with the whole drone thing? I mean, isn't, like, the people who are suffering from it, it's this nameless, faceless thing. It's still scary, but the people on the other end are kind of like, there's a disconnect between what they're actually doing.
And I agree with you entirely. I just think that that's the whole point and why there should have been some other... piece that went to this other end of the chain. I mean, if you showed me the aliens on the other end of this hate crime, then I can actually like identify and have sort of a committable.
So if there would have been some type of like Independence Day looking creature sitting in a throne there and he blew up, you would feel better?
Not better. I just feel like it wouldn't have been as much of a letdown. Like I felt like they built up this really great story to begin with that had so much finesse in a way about higher technology versus organic life, life on Earth as opposed to life in a sort of technical environment.
And they kept with that theme.
Right, but once they got down to the final 11th hour in the last finish line, the aliens at the end of the day that were in this giant deception thing floating in the sky was just this, you know, floating triangle. Like, ooh.
I just think it would have been too cartoony if we'd seen bipedal, yeah. You know, alien. But sorry, Jesse, you were trying to...
Yeah, I was going to say, for me, I mean, I actually... liked the fact that the alien force was basically an algorithm, and throughout the whole movie it's trying to figure out what humanity is to recreate it, and it makes mistakes, and it doesn't actually, and the reason it's so scary is because, you know, even in our everyday life we have sort of computers that are doing tasks for us. They're, you know, even down to, you know, now it's simple things like what music do you want to listen to. You have stuff being funneled towards you, but you don't know it's always correct. And I just felt like on a larger scale, that sort of intelligence where, you know, there doesn't need to be anyone behind it. It's just going to run because it's a logical process and it needs energy. So it's just going to collect this energy. It has no awareness of what it's doing. So I didn't really feel like I needed to hate it. I just felt like it was a pretty good commentary on the fact that, you know, logical decision making without any awareness of emotion or effect on sort of the human, you know, spirit or the human condition, and no acknowledgement of that is very scary. I think it's terrifying to think that you could have something running around making decisions but not really understanding how it's impacting, you know, the area where it's functioning. So I didn't think I was supposed to necessarily hate it. I thought it was just supposed to make me...
There was something scary about the colossalness of this, almost like a godlike computer. It was so huge and dwarfed our heroes that they were just flies in this. Mm. And that there was something scary more than, like, I guess I didn't hate it per se, but there was something that just seemed scary being on the platform of this monolith that was, so huge and immense, and maybe its intelligence is, you know, immense. So I did like that too.
And you know, futurists talk about the singularity that's supposedly going to happen on, you know, in our own reality. And so you do wonder if, and that's the idea of like all these things, all these technology converging and AI basically becoming sentient and self-sufficient and kind of out of control. And so I do think that, I don't know, like some science fiction, it is a possibility. It could happen. Not like this, but...
I hope not.
Well, the commentary that Jesse was talking about is what I mean, is that, you know, it could happen.
Yeah.
Know?
Well, you know, obviously this movie isn't for everybody. That's good. You know, Shannon, I guess, kind of sides more with some of the reviewers we saw, which is, you know, I guess that makes them, you know, more legit too as well. Well, I think we should wrap this up. It's been an hour and a half. Anything else we want to say before we go, though?
I mean, I guess we could talk forever, I'm sure.
No, we can. But okay. I suggest if you're a geek, go give this movie a shot.
Yeah, when it comes on video, give it a shot if you like science fiction.
I agree.
I also think it might be a film that ages better than... I think it might be better received in a couple of years than it was. I think people will just stop maybe overanalyzing it. Because I think sometimes with sci-fi, or like any film experience, right, you either go with it or you don't. It's why I don't watch romantic comedies, because generally I don't think that, you know, love can be that mediocre, because I just can't, right, like, wrap my head around it. And I think sci-fi is sort of the same thing, right? Like, you either go with it or you don't. And I think maybe when it's out of the spotlight a little bit more and people have sort of realized what it is, you can just sort of let the, you know, the mistakes fade away and let the good parts sort of soak in.
And can disconnect with, like, Tom being in it as well. I know that affects people somehow sometimes.
Definitely.
And I think the trailer actually did a disservice to this film. Just, I don't know, as a quick last note, I think it gave away too much. I think Morgan Freeman's part, if it wasn't advertised at all, would have been much better. Because it was kind of obvious that they were humans and not an actual alien force that was down there.
I agree. All right, everybody. Thank you very much for jumping in and helping me out with this episode.
Thanks for having us.
I was a little disappointed there weren't more geeks out there who had seen it, so I'm glad that you guys could help me out. So, and I hope you can join us again.
I hope so, too.
I'll call you guys for another episode coming up here.
Okay, sounds great. Awesome.
Alrighty, everybody. Thank you very much, and have a good geek week.
Thank you.
All right, you too.
All right, bye-bye.